Poetry on the Radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, Sandra Renew, a dab hand with a spray can. The second of two programs focusing on prize-winning poet Sandra Renew. Last week, Poetry on the Radio presented some of Renew's work, but what started off as a simple interview took on a life of its own, so you can hear more of what she had to say in this second of two episodes about her. All three of Poetry on the Radio's producers, Peter Searles, Kimberly K. Williams, and Peter Monaghan, spoke with Sandra Renew about her work. Also in this episode, two poems from a recent reading at the Manning Clark House, where poets read a signature poem from their careers. Also in this episode, a poem from a recent reading at the Manning Clark House, where poets read a signature poem from their careers. And the Rhyming Bugle. I'm Peter Searles. Sandra Renew is a prize-winning Canberra-based poet who has long explored such issues as gender, sexuality, and politics in her work. In her books, including It's the Sugar, Sugar, and Acting Like a Girl, both from recent work press, she deals with gender, sexuality, and self-expression. Last week on Poetry on the Radio, we spoke with Sandra Renew about her work, particularly about how she writes about political and social issues that interest her and that she has lived. She told us, for example, about her book Ruby Red's Affair, which explores themes of coming out in the hostile environment of Queensland in the 1970s and 80s. Today she tells us more about that.
The Ruby Red's Affair, as we've mentioned, is a coming out story, but your work is often an interrogation of gender presentation and LGBTIQ gender discourses. So I just wanted to ask, in your lifetime, you would have seen progress and change in these discourses, particularly lately, and I just wanted to know what has been your experience of that.
Yes, well, that's what I write about. So when I first started to be aware of politics, I was looking for the poetry that you can write about politics. But I was a young adult in the 70s and 80s, and we thought, riding the wave of the feminist movement, that things would be improving. There would be a trajectory of improvement in terms of the valuing of the feminine equal to the valuing of the masculine. And there were things that happened that made us think that, yes, there's change, development, and we can't go back. But what we know from the last few years is we can lose all of that. Just someone in government snaps their fingers, changes the law, and we've lost it all. And I've written some pieces about that. So there's also things that, if you look at the politics of what happens, that where people just don't think through. That whole business of, in 2017, with the Australian Marriage Law Postal Survey was held to look at the support for legalising same-sex marriage. But in effect, what that was, I don't want to get married, I didn't get married, but we thought that's a positive thing to happen. But in effect, it was allowing every person in the country to vote on whether I was a fit and proper person, deemed of being worthy to be included in the polity of the normal. And, I mean, how dare all of you, how dare everybody get to vote on you know, how do I fit? Am I a good person to fit into the social? And I just felt that every person I met had been given the license to vote on whether I could, you know, I was going to be able to join in with my rights and freedoms. And so, I mean, I thought that was not well thought through, but in the end, it came out that there was 60% of people said yes, And no one sort of said, well, but that means 40% of people said no. And that 40% is a lot of people out there that really either don't like you, hate you, don't want you as a who you are to be involved in the world. So right. Let's look at 60% is great, but 40% is not. So there you go. That's
Well, as a gay man as well, I definitely felt the same way about that public discussion. And I found that I didn't, in the moment, I had to sort of turn away from it a lot because it was so uncomfortable for me. It seems like in your work you've leaned into an exploration of that time. Is it something that you had the courage to do at the time, or did you also find it a difficult thing to live through and have to turn away a bit yourself?
Well, it made me think I should be being a little bit more political again. I mean, in my youth, I was a dab hand with a spray can and had a range of badges, and I had a range of placards in my garage. But, you know, as you get older, you think, maybe I'll just calm down a bit. Well, for the gay marriage thing, we put up one of those rainbow placards in our garden, and for a long time we thought, well, that really makes us a target. Mm-hmm. And we were worried about leaving the dog home alone and so on. And then we thought, oh no, we're overreacting, but somebody stole it. So somebody walking or driving or somewhere down the street took the thing out of our garden and silenced us on that, in that regard. So, you know, the world has changed, but not so much.
We think of things as sort of being linear and progressing, but they're far more recursive maybe than we would like.
So definitely it's important to always be keeping that discourse alive, and you certainly do that in your work. One thing that I really enjoyed about your discussion of gender is that your poems show it not just a reaction to the expectations of your community on you, but also within your family, within relationships, and within yourself as well. And I think the more that the discussion has evolved lately, it's sort of the first time for me to be thinking in such personal terms about my own sort of gender performance and things. Yeah, I think your work is a really important way of, you know, opening up the discussion into the really personal as well as just a reaction to the majority opinion as well.
Very good.
It's true. Her poems have this ability to work on so many levels simultaneously. Sometimes you're not even sure until you're experiencing them. You make a connection and you think, oh, yeah, there are things I relate to, certainly as a woman. As a woman with ambition just for herself. And sort of all the times you run up against something you don't expect. You think things are better and then, you know, they're not. There's that ability to connect with her poems, not just intellectually or socially in an ideological way, but in a personal way as well.
I have a poem about the gay marriage thing, if you'd like me to read that.
Yes, absolutely. Please.
This one is called She Marries Her. She asks her for her hand to marry after 5 years of not holy espousal nuptial, but partnership in civility. Let's do it, honey. Promising to waste no time, using her power of eternity to forgive those of you who voted on our fit-for-purpose existence, you're off the hook for being allowed to judge us, even those of you who voted no. So, buoyed up and serendipitous, Pollyanna-ish, she marries her. How now, our now, 5 years on, through viral spreading and unwealth, social distance, gender agenda, like pushing softly at an open door, were we thinking utopia, pleasing the world? She and she are still a lovely couple. brushed down our wedding suits, velvet lapels, glossy waistcoats, all the crimson linings, corsages, time-withered, concentrating scent and memory, sequential moments of impulsing spontaneity. Moth holes a good sign, marking time moving on to jubilance, our tin anniversary.
Is this in one of the books?
That is in Apostles of Anarchy.
Ah. Well, we wanted to give you opportunity to read any other poems you might like to read from the recent books or from the new ones coming out. Was there anything else?
I have one that's not in one of the recent books. It's in a 2018 one, but it's still, I think, very relevant. And it's about the urban-rural divide and what happens to young gay people when they live in a small country town. And usually the poems that I write about that are have ending badly. But this one isn't ending badly.
Which book is it from?
It's from the Orlando Files in 2018 that was published. So that was just before the whole
And that thing. Too is Ginandera Press.
That's right. So this is called It's a Small Town. It's a small town, a nice town, tidy town. It keeps itself nice, street-side rubbish collection, trim lawns, artesian-sourced sprinklers. It's a helping-hand town, a friendly town, inclusive town. It shares itself, men's shed, RV-friendly signage, freshly spruced public conveniences. It's an independent town, an up-itself town, a big something town. It shows itself off, annual gymkhana, open historic house days, running of the Rams town. It's a highway town, a no visible means of support town, a don't blink or you'll miss it town, closed down chicken factory, empty silo, drive in, drive out, a no reason to stop here town. They're small town girls, nice girls, ducks of high school, banana queen girls. They keep themselves nice, knees together, done their homework, ironed their uniforms, nice girls. They kiss chastely in the tuck shop, nicely. They get on the bus to the city girls, schoolies week at the Gold Coast girls, looking for dykes who are nice. Girls helping their grandmas type dykes, June Deli Watkins deportment class dykes, bus ticket back to the small town dykes. Steer away from the bike dykes, the tattoos and overalls, body-piercing tough dykes. Eschew the bad language, gum-chewing, pavement-spitting, graffiti-writing, not-nice dykes, the wouldn't-be-seen-dead in our hometown dykes. Small-town girls in the big city dykes, look for vegetarian, mantra-humming, vanilla dykes, who all came to the city from nice towns dykes. Hook up with consciousness-raising, massage-giving, L-word-binging dykes. Let's go to our high school reunion, nice dykes.
Thank you very much.
I was really struck by how much you were of the society that you grew up in terms of your observation of the institutions, the physicality of the locations, the, you know, the farming, the trucks and so on and so forth. Your identity needn't have been apparent to other people necessarily, but you were very much of your society. Did you feel that growing up?
Like, did I try to hide being a lesbian?
The obverse, really. Did you feel as much a part of the society as your poetry suggests, I guess? I mean, you were so observant of what the institutions were, what the practices were, who the characters were, even these weird guys and their weird sort of foibles and weaknesses and so forth, and the strength of their physicality. And
yes, I think that growing up gay gives you a sensitivity to the world, to the social, that growing up straight doesn't require, because growing up gay or lesbian, you're actually in danger a lot of the time, and you need to, well, that was of the times, right, in the 70s and 80s, and it makes you super aware and super sensitive about what's going on around you. And when I saw some of the headlines in the papers, for example, and I knew some of the attitudes of people, I kind of had a feeling that what's the worst they can do to me? And the worst they can do to you is kill you. And I wasn't prepared to do that, to have that happen, hopefully, but it makes you consider yourself as an outsider. And as an outsider who has to function on the inside, you have to know the rules better than the insiders, better, so you survive. Mm-hmm. But it can be, from my experience of growing up as a lesbian in rural Queensland, it was not a safe environment. And where some people might have felt that they could ring the police, that would be something that we couldn't do.
Right.
That wouldn't do, no. And so we relied on our own friends and so on. But you are aware of the blokes and the chicks and the
queens of the carnival.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it wasn't all grim. It was a fun and exciting, very thrilling to constitute yourself as an outsider on the border,
mm-hmm.
on the,
in the margin.
not part of the centre.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because in a way that almost defines the poet in general.
Yes, that could be true.
Mm.
They're all outsiders with a view of the inside in some ways, I guess.
Well, if you go to a cafe, especially around here, and you see someone with a pencil and a notebook, it's probably a poet sitting there listening to all the conversation and writing it down.
That's right.
Getting the language right, getting the words, getting the phrasing. So, yes.
Maybe we could talk a little bit about getting the language right. We could talk a little bit about the Australianness of your poetry. As a non-Australian, what am I hearing? I mean, you use your language for your poems, and you let the poems be Australian.
Sure. What I try to do is write, if I'm writing a person, I try to write that at the deepest level that I can. It doesn't help a poem to write in generalities. It helps a poem, it seats a poem if you writing the essence of it in detail. And the things that I pick up on a lot, apart from the overt action of whatever's happening, are clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And how people dress and present and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the spoken language mm-hmm. that they use. So if you're trying for an authentic character or a narrative or a picture, the things that you need to write about are the way they look and wear their hat and they spit on the bridge and the words they actually use. Well, the words... Australian isn't a one unified unitary language. It's if you know about dialect and tone and so on and the actual words, all the states are different, that you can tell who comes from where if you listen to the language that the way they speak. Mm. And Australian is just many things. I went to high school in Geelong in Victoria, which is working class high school. Then I went to a boarding school in Warwick in Queensland, and I got all teased and maligned because I spoke posh. For the Queensland vernacular and language and so on is very different from the way that Victorians speak. And I'm not sure now if that's so marked, but that was at the time enough that I was accused of, you know, being posh and putting on the side and so on.
Mm.
But is anyone here a Queenslander? They use different vocab, or they did. So instead of saying a suitcase, they would say a port and so on. There are many examples.
Right.
But, I mean, with globalisation and the move to cosmopolitan, all of that individuality is starting to be smoothed down and sanded over and more uniform things. So writing about the 70s, 80s in Queensland, I had a palette there of difference and interest that probably isn't there today. I don't know.
Prize-winning Canberra poet Sandra Renew. VA, Sandra Renew's book, co-written with P.S. Cottier, will launch on Monday, February 13, at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative in Civic. At a recent reading at the Manning Clark House in Forest, some 20 poets read a signature poem from their careers. Here is one of them from Jeff Page, introduced by the outgoing host of the Manning Clark House reading series, Hazel Hall.
Now it's your turn, Jeff. Jeff is a... yes, hooray! poet, editor and critic. He's written countless poetry books and mentored many poets. He's also won numerous prizes, and my all-time favourite of these is Jericho, which won the ACU prize recently. Jeff served as poetry editor at the Canberra Times for many years, but is best known for his monthly readings and jazz concerts at various venues around Canberra. Many of us will remember the Dead Poets' Dinners that Jeff hosted. Jeff, thank you very much for your huge contribution to poets and poetry in Canberra, including the poem, the program here.
Thanks very much, Hazel. It's good to be invited by a fellow poetry organiser. I probably got the instructions wrongly, but I'll just read one poem which consists of a number of quatrains, and it's kind of tribute, someone's left-handed tribute to American poets, modern American poets, starting with Dickinson and Whitman. And I taught these poets at Narrabundi College for about 30 years, and I think they had a significant influence on me, though that's not always obvious. So this is my signature poem. It's in this book, 101 Poems. Some of you may not have it. That's in the National Library bookshop. I've got a few here. Okay, it's called Ah. Ah, you followers of Whitman, rehearsing his barbaric yorps, rewriting Manahatta in sentences that do not end. And yes, you fans of Emily, the Amherst damsel of the dash, politely quarrelling with God in that crisp and vanished air. So too, you votaries of Frost, aphorist and orchardist, you learned his truths but will not haunt the classrooms of America. And no less so, you slaves of Stevens, you're terminally ill-advised, and no, a lifetime in insurance will not reveal the 13 ways. You devotees of Uncle Les, let's hope you hear his whispers too, not just the braggadocio. Avoid the cage in Pisa. And all you pesterers of Jeffers, up there in his big sewer tower, alone by choice with his Pacific, be sure that he disowns you yet. And yes, you TSE admirers, there's little point in your endeavours. Your tall boy soon became a zeitgeist. You might as well describe the clouds. You copycats of Dr. Williams, I too have slunk among you, selfish late at night with plums, remembering the glaze of rain. And Edward Estlin too remains, his need to stay insanely young, his Charleston of typographies, reminding us that spring has sprung. And all you fanciers of heart who overdosed on metaphor and midnight liquors, you've yet to see the crocus lustres of the stars. And yes, you connoisseur of Rettke, who knew about the dance of bears, the ways of flowers and potting mix, such waltzing was not easy. Miss Bishop will be in there too, though more remotely down in Rio. Her poem on the art of losing. Poet's poet won't quite do. Likewise, you very men with beards and all that syntax under pressure, brilliant with self-mockery, headed for the frozen river. And yes, you fans of Boston's cowl, without the ancestry perhaps, adhering to his last advice. Yet why not say what happened? You acolytes of Plath, likewise, so much beguiled by death and distance. Her illness was a given, yes, so too her fierce revisions. We all of us begin with masters, enhanced by distance and by death, struggling to acquire those voices we find we've found our own.
The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news and events around the ACT. Coming up at Smith's on February 13, That Poetry Thing features Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier. Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier will launch their new book, V8, from Ginninderra Press. Renew's honours include winning the ACT Writers Notable Awards for Poetry 2021 for her collection It's the Sugar Sugar from Recent Work Press. She also took the 2020 ACT Writing and Publishing Award for Poetry and was shortlisted for the 2020 ACT Book of the Year for her collection Acting Like a Girl. Published in 2019 by Recent Work Press, that book reflects on gender, sexuality and coming out in the far north Queensland of the 1970s and 80s. P.S. Cottier's book of poetry, Utterly, was shortlisted for the ACT Book of the Year in 2021. In their new book, the two poets reflect on motor vehicles, transportation and roads travelled. On February 20, at the Playhouse at the Canberra Theatre Centre, English poet, novelist and playwright for the Royal Shakespeare Company, Kay Tempest, appears. Social commentary with synth grooves. Also coming up this month on Thursday, February 24, is the next reading at Manning Clark House in Forest. It will feature Lucy Alexander, Andrew Moss and Luke Whitington. More on that in coming weeks. The Mother Tongue Multilingual Poetry Group will continue its activities in 2023, starting with two events in February. For more information, go to Mother Tongue Multilingual Poetry on Facebook. The group has called for expressions of interest for its coming activities, which will include open mic sessions at Smith's Alternative on three Monday evenings, 27 February, 22 May and 30 October, as well as a performance at the Languages Showcase of the National Multicultural Festival, scheduled for Sunday, 19 February. The group's other possible performances and activities in 2023 include workshops and poetry-related events for adults and young families. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from Melbourne-based pianist Andrea Keller's recording of the Wayne Shorter composition, Footprints. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid. And you can help ArtSound stay on air. ArtSound's Memberthon is your opportunity to support our broadcast 24/7 all year. ArtSound is an all-volunteer station, but costs hundreds of dollars a day to run. Go to artsound.fm to become a member or make a donation. Donations of $2 or more are tax deductible. artsound.fm or call 6295-7444 during business hours or leave a message and we'll get back to you. Thank you.